Fred Film Radio, Turin Film Festival, Italy.
Andrea Cerbi, Fred Film Radio. We are at the Torino Film Festival, and we are here with Jenny Suren and Christopher Doyle, the directors of The White Girl, which is in competition. Good morning. Good morning and good luck.
Can we bribe you to make another vote for us, please?
We cannot vote, unfortunately. But if we make a good interview,
but if I bribe you, maybe you'll tell somebody.
Yes, I can suggest.
I can accept the bribe.
Okay, well, your film is filled with issues because it's a film about self-affirmation, about love, about greed, and about escape, and about gentrification. So it's a lot of meat.
It's also about the sea.
It's also about the sea. How did you manage to put so much stuff into one single film?
I'm glad you noticed, number one. I don't know. I think you have this wonderful opportunity to so you've got to get it out. I think especially for Jenny, kind of first-time director, although we've done other works together. I think that's always the challenge. You have so much you need to say. Young people have so much they need to say. You have something you care about. You really need to get it out. So the challenge is actually to structure it in a way, to put it in a form that people can actually connect with. And of course, that's why some films work for some people, and some people, just can't understand what the hell we're saying. And it's the same with any film. I mean, if films are very interesting for that because there's not really, apart from, Fast and Furious number 75 or Harry Potter, there's no formula. And so I think this is the great challenge always with filmmaking is to say something you care so much about, say it clearly enough that it's understood or accepted or remarked upon, and yet it's fresh or it's special or it's unexpected. And so that balance, again, as you say, we needed to make this film. I need to make images that touch people. Jenny has a story that is very close to her heart, and this place has a history. Bang.
Well, I think we've been to maybe 6 or 7 film festivals around the world with the film already.
But this is the most important.
Yes, but this is the most important festival that we're going to.
I've been here 3 times. So,
I mean, also because the festival has been such a big supporter of our work. First with
so much,
Hong Kong Trilogy, our first film together, which screened here in 2015. And then last year they gave Chris an award and we're back this year. So it is kind of like feeling like a familial to us. But to answer your question, I think, films are like people. People have different sides to them. When we showed the film in Europe, people saw it as people saw the love story. When we show it in Hong Kong
or
Singapore to an Asian audience, it feels very different to them. At least in Hong Kong, there's a lot of symbols or metaphors of stuff that's happening now that's very current, and they see that. And and it's very much a part of what's going on in the public discourse about a certain threat to a way of life in Hong Kong or the disappearance of Hong Kong culture amidst all these political, social, and economic changes.
Yeah, actually, I was talking about gentrification earlier with another director from a London film, mm-hmm. and they are suffering the same thing. So this mm-hmm. issue is really a global one. And you treat it in your film in a way that is also very, I find it kind of funny and ridiculous, ironical, because you are against these kind of people. Mm-hmm. They just think about greed and money. They don't think about anything else. But the core...
Because we make films, we know a lot of people like that.
Yeah, the film industry is filled with...
We work in the film industry also.
But the core of the film is the white girl, which has no name in the film. It's the only character without a name, which is, I think, is a specific choice, isn't it?
Yes. Actually, many fishermen don't have names. They're given... many of the fishermen I interviewed in my research don't have, they have names like, something, it's like, number five, or like,
children,
or like white dog or something like, mm-hmm. it's, and it has to do so much with a certain kind of dispossession, because you'll notice that the houses in the village are all built over the sea. Mm-hmm. It's because fishermen were traditionally not allowed to own land.
Okay.
So they built.
So this is why they live in this kind of community.
Yeah, system. Exactly. Yeah. But what you were saying earlier, which is to me, I think what's so important about Sakamoto, the character that's played by Joe Odagiri, is that he's not a tourist. And I think our audiences in Europe, this is a very current issue. You know, in Venice is being will sink under the weight of 10,000 tourists.
Exactly, yeah.
Getting off cruise ships. You know, you go to Rome in the summer and no Italians live there anymore. They're all like, you know, they're all escaping from tourism, because when you're a tourist, I'm not against tourism, but there's a certain kind of tourist that goes to consume and, yeah, you know, buy stuff, and but they don't go to get to know the people. They're not,
yeah,
you know.
They just go to explore it and come back.
And so
not to take selfies. No.
Yeah, and so take selfies and whack the locals with their selfie sticks.
Yeah, nobody,
and
so, nobody sees the place anymore. They take the photo, so they remind themselves that, you know, oh, I think I was there. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, no.
And so Joe is not a tourist. He's going there because he's a traveler. A traveler goes to places people haven't been before. And I think that this is an important spirit in the film, which is we have to create our own space, or we have to go find
our own
space.
Also, your question about the political issues, I think, you know, we are very big fans of, you know, 60s Czechoslovakian films, which, you know, and there are many films that come from, especially the Eastern Bloc in Europe. I think that the way to get political message across it through humor is the most effective way, because most censors don't understand, you know, visual stuff. They so I think that, you know, it is, yeah, we're using, and we also face censorship in China also. So I think you're working towards a kind of a visual medium, or a medium, an ironic medium, or a medium of where humor is actually subversive.
Yeah, with humor or with symbols to get around the law, just as the fishermen built their houses over the sea because they couldn't own land. We can't say everything that we want to say with words, because where we come from, it's not allowed, frankly.
Yeah.
But we can say in a different way, and I think in those restrictions make us more creative.
I understand. The character of the white girl is she's this girl that she feels invisible. She repeats this many times during the film, and she's called the white girl because she's very pale. Everybody thinks she's a ghost. So because her dad told her a story that was not true, so once she realized that she can have a voice, she starts using this voice. Which is a good metaphor of the self-affirmation for both women and men, but mainly for women. I saw it in that culture. Am I right, or am I wrong?
Well, I think it's not just women and men. Even the street kid Hodai, who you know, he doesn't go to school like the other kids. He lives on the fringe. And he's trying to say something also, but he's trying to understand what's going on, and he's in a way too young to understand, but he has his own way of expressing it also. Like at the very end, he hangs his map on the roof of the ruins, and, you know, it's, we could have had him say to the Chinese tourists on the top of in the house, say, yeah, this place is mine, but it's too obvious. So he hangs the map there. It's like the explorer, you know, or the man on the moon planting the flag, mm-hmm, and saying, this place
this
is ours.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But I think also that this is the function of the so-called love story in the film, is that through another's, and also cinema. I think the point of cinema, the point of image making, is to show you something you didn't see before. And if it's something about yourself, it gives you a turn of mind. And I think, you know, their relationship, which is a love story that doesn't go all the way, is basically a story of affirmation, is a story of trust, is a story of wonder at who you could be as opposed to who people tell you you are.
I want to ask you like a very classical question. You are two directors, so four hands on the same project. How did you work together? like slapping each other hands.
Don't come over here.
No, I mean, is there a pattern that you use, because it's not the first time that you work together, or it's just something that comes up differently for every project? So
he wants me to say something serious so he can say something funny afterwards.
You want to say something?
No, stupid? I think we should do it the other way around this time.
I think the great, first of all, Denny will probably say, I'm going to say it because she wants me to go first. The good thing is in our friendship and in the process that we get all the arguments done in the pre-production period. You know, when we're writing the script or when we're looking for space or when Jenny is doing all the work casting people. So I think that's a great bonus. So we've crossed a certain bridge. Secondly, that we have different personalities. That I'm, you know, I'm always agitated. I'm always, you know, eager to get on with things. So I get on with the lighting and setting up the scene or fixing, you know, something in the art department that is not quite right. Whereas Jenny spends all the energy on giving the embalage, how do you say it in English? The packaging for the audience, for the actors, so that she goes through the script with them. She makes sure that they feel comfortable. She tells them how the scene can work. So basically, we're working in parallel, which is extremely efficient because most people don't work that way. Most people do the preparation, then they move on to the execution. But actually, we're doing it in parallel, so we can work very fast. We shot the film in 14 days. We stay under budget. And also for the actors, it's extremely effective because they're prepared, but then they're free. So they've done the preparation with Jenny. They're ready for what they should be doing. But then when they get on set, because the way we light the set, which is everything's already lit, you know, they can just go for it. So I think all of us enjoy the efficiency of that, and especially for actors who hate to wait around because they lose their energy, they fall out of character, you know, they get bored, you know, et cetera,
hungry.
Or they get hungry, or they have to have their makeup redone again. So I think this leapfrogging, this balance between the two functions is extremely effective, you know, and very cost effective.
Absolutely. So it's your turn now. You can say something funny.
You said everything. No, okay, I'll be quick. Writing and prepping was like World War I. Mm-hmm. Shooting was the interwar period with the armistice and peace. Editing was World War II, and now there's world peace.
Very good. So at the end, you reach peace at the end, which is very good for us, you know, for us, the viewers, too. Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Thank you to Jenny Suen and Christopher Doyle, directors of The White Girl and the Torino Film Festival and Competition. I'm Angela Cerbi for Fred Film Radio, the Festival Insider.
Ciao.
Fred Film Radio, 24/7 on fred.fm and smartphone apps.